All right, today I want to talk about what it's actually like to make an offer on a dental practice. The first step when you buy a dental practice is obviously going to be evaluating the practice to make sure that it is a practice that you actually want to buy. But once you have decided that, yes, this is the right practice for me to purchase, the next step is going to be writing a letter of intent. And that is how you make an official offer to buy a dental practice. My name is Chris. I'm a dentist. I have both bought and sold my own practice, so I understand what it's like to be on both sides of this deal. I currently have an advisory service where I help dentists to purchase dental practices. And so I've been through this process myself multiple times on the purchasing end, on the seller's end, having someone else write one of these letters up and send it to me. And since then, I've helped dozens and dozens of additional dentists through this process. So today I want to talk about when you are ready to make the offer on that practice, what things do you need to make sure that you are including in that offer? So for anyone who signs up to work with me, I always send them this. It's a sample letter of intent. To be clear, I am not an attorney. I started off as an accountant. I then worked as a dentist, and now I work as an advisor helping dentists buy dental practices. When you get to this stage in the process of buying a practice, this is when you want to start reaching out to an attorney that is local to your area. Just like with dentists, you have to be licensed in your state. In order to be an attorney in a state, you have to be licensed in that individual state, and you have to be familiar with the jurisdiction in which you're working. What I'm going to be presenting to you today is just a generic template that gives you an idea of things you need to start to think about as you put together your own offer to buy a practice. All right, so here we have the sample letter of intent. So you're gonna wanna put down your name, the purchaser, and you're gonna wanna have the name of the seller, and you're going to want to make sure you have the full address of the practice listed. You think this seems obvious, but you need to be very clear when you make a letter of intent what exactly you are offering to purchase. You might be dealing with a dentist who has multiple practices. You might be dealing with a dentist who owns the real estate. The dentist might have different ideas of what things he is actually wanting to include in this sale. Things that you might be expecting to receive that the seller isn't expecting to sell. So you need to make sure everything that you are actually offering to purchase is included here. And that starts out with the address where the practice is located. The next step, and this is probably the most obvious thing, the thing that dentists spend the most time thinking about, but in reality, this actually isn't that important in comparison to the rest of this document, but that's the purchase price. For the purchase price, you're going to list the total cost that you are going to be paying to buy this practice. Usually, this fee is going to be paid in full at closing, especially if you are using a commercial bank in order to receive the loan. You are going to be receiving the full amount of the loan, and you're going to then be paying that directly to the dentist. In fact, the banks often send the money directly to the seller. Now, occasionally you might do seller financing where the seller is actually financing a portion of this purchase rather than going straight to the bank. If you're lucky enough to have the cash to just straight out buy this practice, it might be different. But in general, the full price for the practice is going to be paid at closing. Make sure that when you send this letter of intent to make an offer to buy the practice, that you are happy with the things in this document, because it becomes much more difficult to change once you've already come to an agreement. The letter of intent is generally not binding, which means you are not actually buying the practice yet when you sign this letter of intent. What you are doing is you are coming to an agreement with the seller. Usually it's going to go back and forth a few times. You're going to send the letter of intent to the seller. The seller's going to look at it. He might have his attorney review it. Then they're going to look at the numbers and say, hey, actually, we want this number. And oftentimes the letter of intent is going to go back and forth a few times before both parties agree on it. Now, be careful when you make your initial offer, because if you come in too low on the initial offer, the seller might just automatically decide, hey, he's not actually serious. She's not actually serious about buying this practice. I'm just gonna decline, and I'm not even gonna respond to this, and I'm gonna move on to the next person who's interested. In the grand scheme of things, you are going to be making so much money at this practice, if you are buying the right practice, that the amount of money that you're spending on the purchase price is really gonna be a relatively small number in the long run. Yes, right now, this number seems like a big number, but once you've actually been running this practice for a few years, you're going to realize when you have a practice that's bringing in $1 million per year, having a loan for $600,000 where your monthly payment might be something like $4,000 or $5,000, ends up being a lot less of a deal than you originally thought it was going to be. Also, the other thing to keep in mind is when you later decide to retire, you're going to be selling the practice. Just like you're buying this practice now, you're going to have the opportunity to sell it later to someone else when you retire or move or decide you're done with this practice for whatever reason. And at that point, you're generally going to be able to get this equity back that you've invested into the practice. The way that I think about it is when you are buying a practice, it's very similar to buying a mutual fund or some sort of retirement investment, because later when it's time to retire, you're going to be able to sell this for cash. So certainly there's going to be some interest, et cetera, fees with this loan. But the reality is it's more of an investment than it is an expense. So don't be thinking too hard about this purchase price. Certainly you want to get the best deal that you can. And that's something that we spend a lot of time at Practice Ownership Advisors, is helping dentists get the best price possible that they can for the practice. However, if you found the perfect practice in the perfect area that you want to be, you want to live there, and this practice is on the market, do not destroy the goodwill with the seller by over negotiating on the purchase price. Because in the long run, a few hundred dollars per month difference is not going to make a significant difference in the quality of your life over the next 10 years. Next section we're going to look at is what items are going to be included when you purchase the practice. The seller might have very different ideas about what he's selling than what you are expecting to be purchasing. So you need to make sure that you are listing out exactly what you are buying here in the letter of intent. These are just a few examples. You might need to modify things for your specific practice, but you're going to have all tangible, intangible assets of the practice, including but not limited to clinical and office equipment, the furniture, the fixtures, the instruments, the supplies, the leasing improvement signs, et cetera, et cetera. You just want to list out everything that you're expecting to come with that practice. Obviously, if you're working with us, we're going to give you this template that you can use. You don't have to actually list out the things yourself, but you definitely need to read through it. And if there's anything specific at this practice that you want to make sure is included, maybe there's a CBCT, maybe there's an iTero scanning machine, maybe there's some unique piece of equipment or furniture that you're worried the seller might try to take, just make sure you put it here. Put everything you can here. It doesn't hurt to have too many things written here. The next section is items not included. Whether or not you are buying the building in addition to the practice, generally the letter of intent for purchasing the practice is going to be separate from the letter for purchasing the real estate. So here we have items not included. That's going to include real estate. You're not going to be buying any cash assets, pensions, profit sharing plans, anything like that from the dentist. The seller is going to have his own business bank accounts. You are not going to be purchasing the actual business from the dentist. You're going to be creating your own business, and then you're going to be transferring the assets from the seller's business over to yours. And that's not going to include any cash that the dentist has in his own personal bank accounts. The next two sections are the acceptance date and the closing date. Now, these are two different dates. The acceptance date is the date in which the seller signs the LOI and agrees for you to purchase the practice. Usually you're going to give the seller something like 3 to 5 business days. If the seller does not sign and return the letter of intent or give you a counter offer within that time, then your letter of intent to purchase is void. The reason you as a buyer want to put a limit on the acceptance date is because you don't want to have the seller take months and months to decide if they are going to sell you the practice, because that process can be agonizing, and you're going to want to start looking for other practices if the seller isn't actually going to sell this office to you. If the seller doesn't respond within those 3 to 5 days, it's not the end of the world, because you can have a call with the seller and say, hey, why didn't you sign? Is everything all right? Maybe they wanted to counter with something else and they were dealing with their lawyer. Maybe they were on vacation. Maybe they just didn't see your letter. You can always resend it and just change that date. But you always want to have some sort of limit to make sure that the seller is not going to be wasting your time. Then the second date you want to list here is the closing date. The closing of the sale shall take place on or before closing date. You are putting this closing date on here to protect yourself. Sometimes you'll get into a situation where the seller is acting like they want to sell, and then they get a little further along in the process and they start to get cold feet. They start to think, oh, I've been in this practice so long, I'm not sure I'm ready to retire. You are going to have to turn in a notice at your associate job telling them that you're leaving because you're taking over this practice. You want to make sure that you are buying a practice by a certain date, because if the seller decides he wants to wait 2 or 3 months and you've already left your job, you might be sitting around with nothing to do for 2 to 3 months waiting for the sale to go through. That is why you have to have a closing date. Occasionally, you might end up buying the practice before the stated closing date here, which is perfectly fine, but you do not want that date to be taking place after. You have set this date, you're saying, I want to buy it by this date. The seller might come back and say, actually, I would rather sell it by this date. That's part of the negotiations. But once this document is signed, you and the seller have agreed to a date and you need to make sure that you're ready to go for that date and the seller needs to make sure that he or she is ready to go for that date. The next section is the due diligence period. When you initially get the documents to look at the practice, you're doing an initial evaluation. You're looking over all the details and you're trying to figure out as much as you can about this practice from the documents that the seller or the practice broker has sent you. Hopefully you're going to get a chance to also go visit the office and look around, look at the condition of the equipment, try to look through some of the patient charts, etc. But you don't always get time to completely do a comprehensive evaluation before making the offer on the practice. Especially if this is a practice that has recently come to the market, you might not want to wait 3, 4, 5 weeks before you submit an LOI. The reason is because in addition to you looking to buy a practice, there are probably other dentists in your area, corporations as well, other dentists who are looking for satellite practices where they can have associates work, et cetera, that are also looking for a practice to buy. And if you found a practice that is worth buying, chances are there are gonna be other people that are also interested in it. So that is why I would recommend doing your initial evaluation, making sure this is what you want, but then go ahead and submit that letter of intent before it's too late, because someone else might come in and swoop in and buy that practice before you've had the chance to make your offer for the practice. But once the documents are signed, you are not 100% committed to buying this practice yet. You still have the opportunity to evaluate the practice and make sure that it is in the condition that the seller has told you that it was in the documents that he sent you over. So in the letter of intent, you are going to specify a number of days, usually typically around 60 days or so, that you have time to do this due diligence before you officially go on to the next steps of buying the practice. I'm planning on making another video and podcast episode where I go into a lot more depth on exactly what you need to be doing during this due diligence time. But for right now, I want you to just remember that you need to have a specific period of time outlined in a letter of intent that allows you to do the due diligence that you need to do before moving on to the next step of purchasing the practice. Okay, so the seventh section is going to be contingencies. Contingencies are things that give you as the buyer the ability to back out from purchasing the practice if during due diligence you discover something wrong with the practice. Here are a few example contingencies that you might want to have in your letter of intent. You also might have some additional ones that you want to add yourself, and some of these might not apply to you and you can happily remove them when you're doing your own letter. Number one, purchase securing the necessary state license to practice. If you're not yet licensed in the state, you want to have this in there in case there are delays in licensing and you are not yet able to start practicing at the office. You do not want to be committed to buying an office that you're not able to work at yet. So I would recommend putting that contingency in there if you don't yet have a license in that state, just in case there are delays. Execution of an asset purchase agreement. The asset purchase agreement is the document that you sign that officially transfers ownership over from the seller to you. That's going to be the last stage in this process. This next contingency is extremely important and do not miss this. Seller agreeing to a non-solicitation agreement for patients and staff and a non-compete agreement for the same time period covering miles, example, 20 miles from the practice location. This is absolutely non-negotiable. You have to have this in your letter of intent when you are making an offer to buy a practice. The only reason you're buying a practice rather than doing a startup is that you want to make sure that you have patients at that practice in order to do treatment on. If the seller takes either your patients or your staff and goes somewhere else and starts working on them there, then you haven't purchased anything of value. So the seller is going to have to agree that they are not going to solicit, that means try to bring with them either staff or patients. Usually you're going to specify an amount of time, typically it's 5 years, and then you are also going to want to have a radius in which the seller agrees that he or she is not going to work not going to practice dentistry for that same amount of time. If you are in a big city where there are a huge number of dentists and patients typically go to somewhere that's closer to their house, you might be fine getting away with maybe a 10-mile non-compete radius. If you're in a rural area where it's 30, 40 miles in order to get to another dentist, you might need to have a 50 to 100-mile radius in order to make sure that the dentist doesn't go to the town that's not that far away, set up an office, and a lot of the patients just drive over to visit him. Basically, you need to make sure that the seller is not going to open up another office or work at an office that is within driving distance for the majority of your patients. For a typical suburban type area, usually you're gonna have something like 20 to 25 mile radius. The next contingency is that you, the purchaser, are able to secure financing for the practice. If for whatever reason you're not able to get a loan to buy the practice, then you're not gonna be able to buy it. You're just making that clear to the seller. All assets being free and clear of liens and encumbrances. If the seller still has a loan on this practice, the seller needs to pay that off before you purchase it, because obviously, you do not want to have to pay back the seller's debt. Purchaser's verification and approval of all practice details provided by the seller. This is just reiterating the due diligence period. If during due diligence you find out that the seller was lying to you about something material that actually makes a difference in this purchase, then you shouldn't buy this practice. And you are giving yourself the option that if there was something that the seller told you that wasn't true, he presented some documents that were false, or he didn't include some information that he should have that is going to make a difference in whether or not you purchase this practice, this gives you an out to where you can walk away. Seller removing all personal property by closing date. You just need to make it clear to the seller that they need to get out any of their personal stuff, their pictures, etc., before the closing date. Because if there's stuff in this practice that you don't want when you take it over, you have to get started on your business and you can't have the seller's junk lying around. So you're probably gonna end up throwing that away or whatever. You wanna make sure the seller doesn't come back to you say, hey, why didn't you hold on to my blah, blah, blah thing? And you're gonna say, look, I told you all your personal property had to be out by this date. I have this business, I have obligations, I needed to move forward and I didn't have time to think through what stuff you wanted to keep or not. You were supposed to do that before you sold me the practice. And finally, execution of a lease agreement acceptable to both parties. This isn't going to apply to every deal. If the seller is leasing from another landlord, you're hopefully just either going to assume that lease or you're going to start a new lease with that landlord. However, if the seller owns the building and you are not yet at a point where you want to purchase that building, you're going to need to have a lease agreement in order to continue practicing at this location. So that's it for the contingencies. There might be additional ones that you want to add. You can do whatever you want. This is your letter of intent. Confidentiality, this one's pretty straightforward. You're going to be looking through the seller's tax documents, all of his financials. You're going to be getting really deep into the seller's life, and you obviously cannot be sharing this with anyone else because it's very personal and very private. That's what you're agreeing to here. Transition support. Sometimes this section is a little bit tricky to navigate. If you are buying a really big practice and you want the seller to stay on for a little bit to help ease that transition, you might be able to afford it, because if this practice is big enough to support two dentists, you want that seller to stay on, that's great. I've seen some transitions where the seller stayed on long term, like 5-10 years after the sale. If you want to do that, that's great. You need to make sure that there are enough patients and there's enough treatment to support both of the dentists. But more commonly than not, the practice is not big enough to support two dentists. And oftentimes the issue that arises is that the seller wants to stay on for a specific period of time and the buyer can't afford slash just doesn't want to have that dentist staying on. So this is the section in the LOI where you're gonna clearly outline. You're going to say post-sale, I'm going to offer for the seller to stay on this many days per week. These are the terms under which the seller will be offered to stay on. Maybe you decide you want the seller to stay on for 2 days per week for the first 6 months. Whatever it is, you're gonna outline that here. You don't necessarily have to follow this later. Usually there's gonna be a statement that says the final details will be outlined later in the asset purchase agreement or in a separate associate contract. But this gives an idea to the seller what you're thinking and what kind of your plans are. But this section is basically designed to help give the seller an idea of where your head is, what your plans are. Are you going to want the seller to stay on? Do you not want the seller to stay on? It's good just to give as much information to the seller as possible so the seller can be prepared for what's coming. Exclusivity period. This next section is really the reason that you are writing a letter of intent. The exclusivity period is a defined period of time in which the seller agrees to take the practice off the market so that you can do your due diligence and get ready for financing and all the steps in this practice acquisition process without having to worry about someone else coming in and buying the practice. So this section is just going to outline how long you expect this exclusivity period to last for and any additional terms you have relating to that. All right, we're getting close here. We just have a few more sections. Dispute resolution, honestly, that's gonna be between you and your lawyer. I'm not gonna go into too much detail with that one. Next one is earnest money deposit. Now this is kind of a difficult one. It's gonna very much depend on the transition, on the transaction. An earnest money deposit is an amount of money that you are going to be giving to the seller or you're going to be giving to an intermediary such as a lawyer or a bank or some sort of closing company. This amount of money is meant to be a deposit as a way of showing good faith to the seller that you are actually serious about buying this practice. Now, because I have been on both sides of this, I have both bought and sold a practice, I kind of have an idea of what it's like to be on both sides of the transition. As a buyer, you need to put your head into the seller's mindset. The biggest fear for the seller is that he or she spends all of this time getting the practice ready for sale. He's told all of his staff, she's told all of her patients. They've made this big announcement, hey, I'm selling the practice, I'm gonna be gone on this date. But if the buyer backs out, that dentist is then going to be stuck there at the practice, which they've already basically said, hey, I don't wanna be here anymore. I'm trying to get out of here. But then they're trapped here because the sale didn't go through. There's a pretty good chance that the seller is selling their house. Maybe they're moving to a new city, a new part of the country. They have plans to do things with their family. Maybe they were hoping to take a vacation and they bought plane tickets. If you as a buyer make it seem like you are going to buy this practice and then back out at the last minute, that is going to be extremely difficult and extremely stressful on that seller. And also you just wasted a lot of time and money, both your time and your money because you spent money on a lawyer and the seller's time and the seller's money because the seller spent money on a lawyer. So that is the reason that many sellers are going to request that you give them an earnest money deposit, an amount of money that if you back out of the sale, the seller is going to get to keep. Now, if you are backing out because of one of those contingencies that we listed earlier, then you're going to get this money refunded to you. But if you're backing out and you don't have one of those contingencies, then the seller keeps the money. If you are requesting a closing date that's going to occur more than 1 to 2 months in the future, then you are probably going to have to give a larger earnest money deposit because you are asking the seller to wait for you in order to sell the practice. The further out you schedule the closing date, the more risk that is for the seller because they don't want to have to take this practice off the market for 6 months just to have you back out. So if you're going to be requesting a closing date that's 4, 5, 6 months out, you're probably going to have to give a much larger earnest money deposit. Now, finally, the last page is the signatures. Obviously, you're going to have to sign this document. Like we already talked about, sometimes this LOI has to go back and forth multiple times before you come to an agreement. When you send it, you're going to sign the purchaser section and you're going to hope that the seller signs the seller section. If the seller agrees to your terms, they're gonna sign this and then you are now going to be in the due diligence phase and you're gonna be able to move forward. If the seller replies and says, hey, we want these changes to the LOI, sometimes they will make the changes and then sign the seller portion and send it back to you blank, and you're gonna have to fill out the signature for the purchaser section. Sometimes they'll just ask for some changes, you have to make these changes, and then send them the updated letter. Once you and the seller have both signed this letter of intent, then you're able to move on to the next steps, that's due diligence, and that's financing. In order to get financing on a practice, the banks are going to need to see a letter of intent that is signed by both you and the seller. They're not going to approve a purchase until they are sure that the purchase is actually an option to go through because they don't want to waste their time approving you for something that the seller's not even going to agree to. So once you have this letter of intent, you're able to move on to the next steps. The letter of intent is probably the most important process, second only to maybe the initial evaluation of the practice. But this is where you're really going to be setting forward the rest of the transaction. Sure, the asset purchase agreement is the document that's actually going to be legally binding, but the asset purchase agreement is kind of a boilerplate thing that's already kind of fix for dental practice sales. And the things that you agree to in this letter of intent are the things that the lawyer is going to make sure are included in that asset purchase agreement. So this is really where the bulk of the negotiations happen. It's right here. Once you get this thing signed, hopefully you're able to make it all the way through to closing. You still have usually at least 2 to 3 months after signing this letter before the closing date. There's going to be a lot of things that need to be done. None of it's really that difficult, but there's probably 50, 60 different things that you have to keep in mind. You know, there's financing, there's insurance, credentialing, there's meeting with the staff, sending a letter to the patients, introducing yourself as the new dentist, visiting the office to make sure the equipment is in good condition, finding a good lawyer to work with, finding a good accountant to work with, setting up your LLC or PLLC or corporation, getting payroll figured out so that you can pay your staff the first week that you're working there, setting up your business bank account, your business credit card, setting up payment processing so that you can charge patients when they come in. I'm not gonna lie, there's a ton of steps. It's a lot of work. So you wanna make sure you give yourselves a few months to do that. If this is your first time buying a practice and want help with some of those steps, because I'm gonna be honest, it's extremely stressful. There's a lot that you have to do. If you are interested in getting some help with all of the different steps that you have to do after signing the LOI before buying the practice, make sure to reach out to Practice Ownership Advisors. That's what we do. We make it easier for dentists to go from being associates to being owners. It's still not going to be easy. It's still going to be hard. There's still a lot of steps. But my goal is to make the process at least a little bit easier, make sure you're not missing any important steps, and answering any questions you have through that process. You can find our website in the description, practiceown.com, or you can find my email there as well. Send me an email, reach out if you have any questions. Buying a dental practice, it's gonna be a lot of work, but in the end, it's gonna be worth it. When you are making twice as much as you were making as an associate, when you have so much more control over your schedule, you're working less while making more, and when you realize how much more respect you have as an owner versus working as an associate, you're gonna be glad you did this. The first year, first 6 months especially, it's gonna be stressful, but you made it through dental school. You know how to deal with stressful situations. You got this, and good luck on your journey to practice ownership.